We are starting Chapter 5 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, called The Whomping Willow. The end of the summer vacation came too quickly for Harry's liking. He was looking forward to getting back to Hogwarts, but his month at the Burrow had been the happiest of his life. It was difficult not to feel jealous of Ron when he thought of the Dursleys and the sort of welcome he could expect next time he turned up at Privet Drive. On their last evening, Mrs. Weasley conjured up a sumptuous dinner that included all of Harry's favorite things, ending with a mouthwatering treacle pudding. What is treacle, by the way? It doesn't sound very appetizing. It's a trickle pudding.
I think it's... Oh, hold on.
British people have the weirdest foods.
Oh, it's like sponge cake.
Like sponge cake.
Yeah. A treacle sponge pudding is a traditional British dessert dish consisting of a steamed sponge cake with golden syrup cooked on top of it, sometimes also poured over it and often served with hot custard.
Everything is like just off of what I actually want to eat. Like, it's,
I think that sounds delicious.
I don't know, like, wouldn't it be better if instead of sponge cake it was pound cake and instead of custard ice cream?
No, I love custard.
Really?
Yeah.
It just feels like they're so close to making things that taste good, but then they're just bizarre.
Well, you also have like a very limited scope on desserts. I have to say that is, you are not the authority on
desserts. They also eat kidney pie, so.
Did you not eat kitten pie?
Kidney, not kitten.
Oh,
I mean, maybe it's kitten kidneys, I don't know.
Oh, no.
No, not the kitten kidneys.
That's horrible.
I know. Alright, anyways, so he's eating his mouth-watering treacle pudding with probably some custard.
Yum.
Fred and George rounded off the evening with a display of filibuster fireworks. They filled the kitchen with red and blue stars that bounced from ceiling to wall for at least a half an hour. Then it was time for a last mug of hot chocolate and bed. It took a long while to get started the next morning. They were up at dawn, but somehow they still seemed to have a great deal to do. Mrs. Weasley dashed about in a bad mood looking for spare socks and quills. People kept colliding on the stairs. What's that?
Mrs. Weasley is going to be me as a mom.
No, that's not true.
I'm kind of worried it will be.
No, don't do it. People kept colliding on the stairs, half-dressed with bits of toast in their hands, and Mr. Weasley nearly broke his neck, tripping over a stray chicken as he crossed the yard carrying Ginny's trunk to the car.
Okay, so you do a lot of the tangents on discussion, so now I'm going to do a discussion.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I think it's interesting that the only real example of a good matriarch that she gets into is Mrs. Weasley. She doesn't really get into Harry's mom as the prospect of a mother.
That's true.
A heroine, but not really like...
What about Professor McGonagall? She's a bit motherly sometimes. I mean...
Not really. I mean, she's a spinster who doesn't have any children, so the only...
That's true, yeah.
You see Malfoy's mother a little bit.
Right.
And you see... what's his name? Neville's grandmother.
That's true, yeah.
But really, Mrs. Weasley is the only one that you really get into. Which I think is really interesting because you have more of the father and mentor types.
Yeah.
In like Sirius, even Lupin, Dumbledore, of course. And you get the anti-feminine and masculine archetype in the Dursleys, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he really doesn't have any, like, in terms of heroes, they're all male.
And I guess that makes sense, but...
Yeah, but it would have been nice to have Professor McGonagall be maybe a bit stronger, or there to be when just when they're musing about the historical witches and wizards, if there was one witch. Oh, you know, come to think of it, in Methods of Rationality, he talks about this. Why aren't there more girls as heroes?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
We're just as like supplemental mentor characters, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I wonder if she has a hard time writing for women.
It's very possible, I don't know.
Because the biggest, like, female characters are, like you said, Mrs. Weasley, who's a very stereotypical, like, homely mom.
God, yeah, exactly.
There's Aunt Petunia. What'd you say?
Hermione.
Oh yeah, Hermione, who's a bit of a know-it-all, like a stereotypical.
Right.
And you know, Petunia is a stereotype. McGonagall is a stereotype.
You gotta have Ginny emerge, but I thought that again,
Yeah.
like she almost made it, but then just like kind of missed the mark, you know, not just never quite got there.
Yeah, Ginny doesn't have very much character.
She doesn't get developed until the last couple books.
Yeah. Really, the last book. And even then, yeah.
You get to see her a little bit in the sixth book.
Yeah, you see her a little bit, but she doesn't
Her
really.
personality emerges more in the sixth book
Does
because,
it?
yeah.
Maybe I'm confusing it a bit, but. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's kind of weird. That's a good point.
Sorry. Okay, continue.
Harry couldn't see how eight people, six large trunks, two owls, and a rat were going to fit into one small Ford Anglia. He had reckoned, of course, without the special features that Mr. Weasley had added. Not a word to Molly, he whispered to Harry as he opened the trunk and showed him how it had been magically expanded so that the luggage fitted easily. When at last they were all in the car, Mrs. Weasley glanced into the back seat where Harry, Ron, Fred, and George, and Percy were all sitting comfortably side by side, and said, "Muggles do know more than we give them credit for, don't they?" She and Ginny got into the front seat, which had been stretched so that it resembled a park bench. I mean, you'd never know it was this roomy from the outside, would you? Mr. Weasley started up the engine and then trundled out of the yard, Harry turning back for a last look at the house. He barely had time to wonder when he'd see it again when they were back. George had forgotten his box of filibuster fireworks. 5 minutes after that, they skidded to a halt in the yard so that Fred could run in for his broomstick. They had almost reached the highway when Ginny shrieked that she'd left her diary. Da-da. By the time she had clambered back to the car, they were running very late and tempers were running high. Mr. Weasley glanced at his watch and then at his wife. Molly, dear? No, Arthur. No one would see. This little button here is an invisibility booster I installed. That'd get us up into the air, and then we'd fly above the clouds. We'd be there in 10 minutes and no one would be any wiser. I said no, Arthur, not in broad daylight. They reached King's Cross at 10:45. Mr. Weasley dashed across the road to get the trolleys for their trunks, and they all hurried into the station. Harry had caught the Hogwarts Express the previous year. The tricky part was getting into platform 9 3/4, which wasn't visible to Muggle eyes. What you had to do was walk through the solid barrier dividing platforms 9 and 10. It didn't hurt, but it had to be done carefully so that none of the Muggles noticed he vanished. "Percy first," said Mrs. Weasley, looking nervously at the clock overhead, which showed they only had 5 minutes to disappear casually through the barrier. Percy strode briskly forward and vanished. Mr. Weasley went next, Fred and George followed. "I'll take Ginny, and you two come right after us," Mrs. Weasley told Harry and Ron, grabbing Ginny's hand and setting off. In the blink of an eye, they were gone. Let's go together. We've only got a minute, Ron said to Harry. Harry made sure that Hedwig's cage was safely wedged on top of his trunk and wheeled his trolley around to face the barrier. He felt perfectly confident. This wasn't nearly as uncomfortable as using food powder. Both of them bent low over the handle of their trolleys and walked purposefully toward the barrier, gathering speed. A few feet away from it, they broke into a running crash. Both trolleys hit the barrier and bounced backwards. Ron's trunk fell off with a loud thump, and Harry was knocked off his feet. Hedwig's cage bounced on the shiny floor, and she rolled away, shrieking indignantly. People all around them stared, and a guard nearby yelled, "What in the blazes do you think you're doing?" "Lost control of the trolley," Harry gasped, clutching his ribs as he got up. Ron ran to pick up Hedwig, who was causing such a scene there was a loud muttering about cruelty to animals from the surrounding crowd. "Why can't we get through?" Harry hissed to Ron. "I don't know." Ron looked around wildly. A dozen curious people were still watching him. "We're going to miss the train," Ron whispered. "I don't understand why the gateway is sealed off." Harry looked up at the giant clock with a sickening feeling in the pit of his stomach. 10 seconds, 9 seconds. He wheeled his trolley forward cautiously until it was right against the barrier and pushed with all his might. The metal remained solid. 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. "It's gone," said Ron, sounding stunned. "The train's left. What if Mom and Dad can't get back through to us? Have you got any Muggle money?" Harry gave a hollow laugh. "The Dursleys haven't given me pocket money for all about 6 years." Ron pressed his ear to the cold barrier. "Can't hear a thing," he said pensively. "What are we going to do? I don't know how long it'll take Mom and Dad to get back to us." They looked around. People were still watching them, mainly because of Hedwig's continuing speeches. "I think we better go and wait by the car," said Harry. "We're attracting too much attention." "Harry," said Ron, his eyes beaming. "The car. What about it?" "We can fly to Hogwarts." "But I thought..." "We're stuck, right? And we've got to get to school, haven't we? And even underage wizards are allowed to use magic if it's a real emergency. Section 19 or something, or the restriction of thingy." "But your mom and dad," said Harry, pushing against the barrier in a vain hope it would give way. "How'll they get home?" "We don't need the car," said Ron impatiently. "They know how to act it. You know, just vanish and reappear at home. They only bother with flu powder in the car because we're all underage and we're not allowed to act it." Harry's feeling of panic turned suddenly to excitement. "Can you fly it?" "No problem," said Ron, wheeling his trolley around to face the exit. "Come on, let's go. If we hurry, we'll be able to follow the Hogwarts Express." And they marched off through the crowd of curious muggles out of the station and back onto the side road where the old Ford Anglia was parked. Ron unlocked the cavernous trunk with a series of taps from his wand. They heaved the luggage back in, put Hedwig in the back seat, and got in front. "Check that no one's watching," said Ron, starting the ignition with another tap of his wand. Harry stuck his head out of the window. Traffic was rumbling along the main road ahead, but their street was empty. "Okay," he said. Ron pressed a tiny silver button on the dashboard. The car around them vanished, and so did they. Harry could feel the seat vibrating beneath them, hear the engine, feel his hands on his knees, and his glasses on his nose, but for all he could see, he had become a pair of eyeballs floating a few feet above the ground in a dingy street full of parked cars. "Let's go," Ron's voice said from his right. And the ground and the dirty buildings on either side fell away, dropping out of sight as the car rose. In seconds, the whole of London lay smoky and glittering below them. And there was a popping noise in the car. Harry and Ron all reappeared. "Uh-oh," said Ron, jabbing the invisibility booster. "It's faulty." Both of them pummeled it. The car vanished. Then it flickered again. "Hold on," Ron yelled, and he slammed his foot on the accelerator. They shot straight into the low, woolly clouds, and everything turned dull and foggy. "Now what?" Harry said, blinking at the solid mass of cloud pressing in on them from all sides. "We need to see the train to know what direction to go in," said Ron. "Dive back down again, quickly." They dropped back beneath the clouds and twisted around in their seats, squinting at the ground. I can see it, Harry yelled. Right ahead, there. The Hogwarts Express was streaking along below them like a scarlet snake. Due north, said Ron, checking the compass on the dash. Okay, we'll just have to check in on it every half hour or so. Hold on. And they shot up through the clouds. A minute later, they burst into a blaze of sunlight. It was a different world. The wheels of the car skimmed the sea of fluffy cloud, the sky a bright, endless blue under the blinding white sun. All we've got to worry about now are airplanes, said Ron. They looked at each other and started to laugh. For a long time, they couldn't stop. It was as though they'd been plunged into a fabulous dream. This, thought Harry, is surely the only way to travel. Past swirls and turrets of snowy clouds, in a car full of hot, bright sunlight, with a fat pack of toffees in the glove compartment, and the prospect of seeing Fred and George's jealous faces when they landed smoothly and spectacularly on the sweeping lawn in front of the Hogwarts castle. They made regular checks on the train as they flew farther and farther north, each dip beneath the clouds showing them a different view. London was soon far behind them, replaced by neat green fields that gave way in turn to wide purplish moors, a great city alive with cars like multicolored ants, villages with tiny toy churches. And I think we'll stop there. This is getting kind of late. And I hope you like that, my sweet. Sleep well, darling. I love you so much. Good night.